Hello, and welcome to Dialogues Dispatch, a podcast series from Google on technology and society. I'm Kent Walker, and for today's dispatch, I'm thrilled to be joined by a prominent economist for a conversation on generative AI's impact on the economy, productivity, and the future of work. Andy McAfee is a scientist at MIT, and he's the co-director of their initiative on the digital economy. He's also the inaugural Tech and Society Visiting Fellow. Welcome, Andy.
Kent, it's good to be here.
So let's start off our conversation by just defining our terms and understanding a little bit more about what we mean when we talk about generative AI. You've been working on this. How do you see this?
I see generative AI, instead of trying to define it precisely, I want to try to categorize it. Because I want to go back to kind of a basic belief that economists hold, which is that technological progress is incredibly important. It's the only way we become more prosperous without working longer and harder. Technology lets us increase our standard of living without throwing more labor hours at the problem over and over. And so economists believe there's no such thing as a free lunch. That's kind of, they're a skeptical group, right? The only free lunch they believe in is technological progress. And the technologies they get most excited about are the ones that come along. They're not very common, but they come along and they kind of take tech progress to a different level. They accelerate it. There's a quick jump in the normal, somewhat, you know, predictable pace of tech progress. The first modern general purpose technology, and the one that we still talk about, is the steam engine, which unleashed all of the energy and fossil fuels and completely transformed the human experience, transformed the world. These technologies are a big deal. Electrification was a big deal. The computer was a big deal. I believe that AI in general is certainly belongs in that category of general purpose technologies. And to be more specific, I think this new flavor of AI called generative AI absolutely deserves the categorization as a general purpose technology because it can do so much. And it is getting better very quickly, and it's already diffusing super widely. Those are the things that economists look at to say, okay, this technology is going to be a big deal, not just for big tech companies, not just for a couple industries, but across economies and societies.
So when you say it's diffusing widely and coming quickly, how quickly do we have? Is this a year, 5 years, 10 years, more? What do you think?
Let me give you a couple things that lead me to believe that this is coming relatively quickly. And underneath your question is an important point. Previous general purpose technologies have taken decades to have their effects at kind of a visible economy-wide level. I think Gen AI might be quicker. We look at some professions and we already know that almost all programmers or coders are using generative AI right now. There's a survey done a little while back just about different kinds of knowledge worker, and I think on the order of 40% of them reported that they were using generative AI, whether or not the companies they worked for knew about it, supported it, or even wanted them to. So it's out there. And I think part of the reason it's going to spread quickly is A, it's very powerful, right? It can do a lot. It's also available on our devices over any internet connection that we have. It's getting incorporated into other technologies very, very quickly. All kinds of tech firms are really excited about it. And maybe the most fundamental thing is it's just really easy to use. This is a strange technology. You talk to it, you tell it what you want, it gives you its best stab at it, and then you can refine it and go back and forth with it. This is not how you and I grew up, you know, programming SQL databases and stuff like that. This is very easy. It's much, much more intuitive than I think almost any other technology we've come up with. So I put all that together, and I kind of think that Gen AI is going to spread relatively quickly. And I think that we're going to see the productivity benefits, even at an economy-wide level. This is a strong claim. Because to move the productivity growth of an entire economy, the technology needs to be a big deal. I'll be surprised if we come back in a decade and we're still waiting for the productivity payoff of generative AI.
You've seen the studies from a number of leading consultancies and optimistic numbers about how this could improve productivity throughout the world. Your point about tools is a good one. A hammer doesn't tell you how to build a better house.
Yeah, and if you talk to your hammer, you're kind of a weirdo. But if you talk to your generative AI, which I'm doing kind of a lot right now, it's a little weird at first, and then it becomes, how did I ever not have this tool?
Now, on the one hand, productivity is a key element for our overall increase in living standards and general happiness. At the same time, there's a risk of labor force displacement and some social complexity that comes along with that.
How should we be thinking about it?
Yeah, and it's a risk and it's a certainty. What we know about general purpose technologies is that they change societies. They upset the status quo. The thing I want to say really clearly up front, though, is that we have experience with, you know, a decent-sized handful of general purpose technologies. When every one of them came along, there was a societal level freak out about people saying, oh my heavens, we won't need as many workers anymore. The era of massive technological unemployment is right around the corner because of the internal combustion engine, because of electricity, because of the spreadsheet. I want to be super clear. That has not happened. The thirst for labor in economies around the world has grown, keeping pace very nicely with population. And the thing that I'm more worried about than short-term massive technological unemployment is the fact that our workforces in most of the rich world are graying very quickly. There's a huge wave of retirements looming. And over, I keep hearing about shortages of different kinds of worker, different kinds of labor. I think that's actually going to be the bigger thing that we're going to be worrying about down the road. And I'm super grateful that a very powerful, very general technology has come along that can help us ease some of those looming shortages.
How do you see the changing of labor, changing of work? Will this have more impact on white-collar jobs and blue-collar jobs, unlike some of the technologies of the past?
The computer era so far has had its biggest labor force effects right there at the middle of the workforce. Because right there in the middle, I'll talk about the American workforce. That person right there at the 50th percent of the American workforce is not college educated. We're a non-college educated workforce. And they were generally doing routine work. That can be routine physical work. That's an assembly line worker at a factory. It can be routine cognitive work. That's the payroll clerk working for that same factory. The automation that we've had for, you know, half a century the length of the computer era, has been very good at handling routine work. Most of us don't consider writing a report or translating a document into a foreign language. That usually is not in our category of routine work. That's considered higher skill done by more educated people. And I think generative AI is going to have an effect maybe higher on the education ladder and the wage ladder than the previous waves that we've seen before. Now, again, I want to be clear. I'm not predicting massive unemployment of everybody who works with words in 5 years, but the impact of this technology might well be a little bit higher up in the wage and the education ladder than we've seen so far.
How do you think about popular acceptance of these tools? In many ways, AI has been around for a while. For the last dozen years, if you've been using Google Search or Translate, you've been using AI.
Yeah.
But this new era of chatbots seemed to be something different in terms of the social conversation. How do you see that?
But look at how quickly these things took off, right? When the first commercial chatbot was released a little more than a year ago, I think it was the quickest technology ever to 100 million worldwide users. The curiosity around the world was pretty enormous, and that has given way not just to curiosity, but to interest and people integrating this into their work and their lives. I had somebody a while ago tell me that the way they cooked dinner was to say, give me a yummy recipe, you know, maybe a little Southern Italian with the ingredients that I happen to have in my fridge right now. And that was what I ate for dinner last night. So that's a kind of a cute use, but it just shows the weird flexibility of this technology.
Well, and the importance. We talk about AI spanning everything from the extraordinary to the everyday.
Yeah.
And both sides of that map, right? The progress of science that we're seeing, but also,
what's in it for me? What's the immediate benefit that I'm going to get from using these?
The immediate benefit of the AI that we already have is better routing when we're driving someplace. Our GPS is a very AI-enabled and works really, really well. As you know very well, our ability to forecast the weather has improved dramatically just in the past couple decades, and AI has boosted the accuracy of that too. But then we can go to the extraordinary. I read a little while back that a team of researchers has come up with an entirely new class of antibiotic. This is super important because this class deals with the antibiotic-resistant bacteria that we have out there. The last time we had an entirely new class of antibiotic was almost 40 years ago. And so this toolkit that we have is being applied to recipes, to our driving directions, and to keeping us healthy going forward.
It's a fantastic range of applications. Now, in your work, are there things that you have come across that have surprised you? insights that you hadn't had before you really started to focus in on AI and generative AI in particular?
When I first heard about this generative AI, I thought it was going to be super useful for very highly skilled people who would be using it as kind of their assistant or their clerk, right? And that's absolutely one of the things that's happening. A more fundamental thing that's happening, which I'm incredibly excited about, when we've done studies about generative AI use across a group of people, it turns out it's the least experienced and least skilled people whose performance improves the most. And I should have thought about that more clearly, because what's going on is they're tapping into the accumulated knowledge that's in that vast body of text that the generative AI system was trained on. And so that embeds a huge amount of knowledge that people can just tap into by asking questions. Your career is like mine. It's long enough to have seen several ways of knowledge management technology come along and finally harness the knowledge of the enterprise, whatever. They haven't done that yet. I think we finally have a real knowledge management technology. And when I think about trying to learn something new quickly and with good coaching and good help, I get incredibly excited.
The history of this recent wave of technology is fascinating, because in many ways it comes out of search. It comes out of the problem of trying to find information on the web. You start with words and prompts and then synonyms and the knowledge graph and the word to vec, where you're mapping all of human language in math.
Exactly.
And using that. And the remarkable thing is it doesn't just learn the rules of language. It learns the reasoning embedded in human knowledge. So it's more than just a search tool now. It's a reasoning tool. And that seems to open up new frontiers.
And the stack that you just articulated is fantastic. And we keep getting surprised by how powerful it is, right? Google has done fantastic research on protein folding. Okay, now we can take this new category of tool, that stack that you just identified, and throw it at some of our toughest scientific challenges. I know that Google and other companies are using it to try to let material scientists tell a system what properties they want and have it suggest the most likely alternatives. We've explored a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of the possible materials that we could build, and that space is going to expand. We're going to be exploring many more of the possibilities. We're going to get good stuff out of that.
Well, and this notion of combinatorial innovation, when you're starting to use AI to make quantum computing better and quantum computing to make AI.
When that happens, that's going to get crazy, right? My mind is not ready for that.
Well, and then as you allude to, this notion of material science could be revolutionary. If you think back to 100 years ago, pretty much everything was iron or wood or cotton or wool. And now already we have 1,000 different materials around us.
But think how long Thomas Edison had to look to find the tungsten that became the filament for the incandescent light bulb. That was just trial and error. We have an alternative. And I could say, look, I need a material that's not going to burn up when it gets really hot. We'll last when we put out a lot of light. And our systems are going to say, here are 50 candidates, try these.
The old genius is 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration.
Yeah.
If AI can help with the perspiration side of that equation, it unlocks an awful lot more inspiration. I mean, one thing that we're proud of is that a kid on the streets of Delhi using Google search today has access to the same information as the president of the United States.
Yeah.
That's a remarkable state of affairs. And now if kids around the world have access to creative tools,
right,
that right now would be on their ability to access, that opens up.
The only word I disagree with there is if. This is already happening, right? And I guarantee, unless you're about to tell me something really surprising, Google's going to roll out more and more of those tools. Other companies are as well. These devices that we carry around are going to become even more broadly applicable than they are right now. And we're going to have to do less of the grunt work of trying to get anything done.
If you're out there, thinking about the digital policy for your country, the strategy for global competitiveness, how should you be thinking about this? What makes sense?
One thing we know from history is that the appearance of a new GPT, a general purpose technology, very often comes along with the passing of the torch of national leadership. So when steam came along, the UK did the best job of harnessing steam power in the 18th century. And by the 19th century, we're talking about how the sun never set on the British Empire. The US did the best job with the combination of electrification and the internal combustion engine, became the dominant economy in the 20th century. But the bigger point is that trying to wish these technologies away or sit on the sidelines or, I think, constrain them too much, I don't think it's the right playbook. I think the right playbook is to set up guardrails and make sure that when things happen, we have the ability to correct them if we don't like what's going on.
It's important to have both sides of the equation, of course. At Google, we've talked about being bold and responsible. And I think the responsibility part of that narrative does help build trust and broad popular acceptance, where people see that the AI tools are delivering benefits for a wide class of folks throughout society. They're making people's lives better in very tangible ways.
Yeah, and absolutely. And if you release a technology that clearly is biased against some group or perpetuates historical biases, that's not great. We need to be careful about that. I'm personally more worried about the bold part than the responsible part. I think there is timidity, there's resistance out there. And my advice, both to policymakers and to people trying to make organizations run better, is yes, there are risks. They're pretty well articulated now. I'm confident that we're going to make progress on them. The way to start learning about these new, powerful, kind of weird technologies is to start doing things with them. I don't think anybody's going to deliver the perfect generative AI playbook to an organization. You've got to figure that out for yourselves. Plan less, iterate more is a motto that I carry around these days.
So, Andy, what are some of the biggest unanswered questions or the areas of uncertainties we're looking at here?
One of the best things about my time as the visiting fellow in technology and society at Google has been the chance to go around and interview a bunch of the Googlers who, some of them, helped pioneer this technology, and all of them were excited about it. Every single person that we talked to, you could just sense the excitement about how powerful and how widely useful this technology is. One of the big uncertainties with generative AI is where are the boundaries of it? These technologies have some serious limitations right now, but I think we're going to make very fast progress on these problems because they are important and because many organizations have huge incentive to make progress on them. I don't know when we have this conversation, even in 3 years, what the litany of big technological challenges is going to be, but I think it'll be different than today.
It's a great challenge and maybe a great note on which to end an exciting conversation. Sergey Brin, one of our founders, always used to say, ideas are easy, execution is hard. So now it's up to all of us to live up to that notion of be bold and be responsible and bring the two together. So Andy McAfee, it's been a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you very much.
Kent, it's great. Thanks very much.